Hi guys, this is Brandon. This movie's ruined my life.
So today we're going to be talking about Ghost in the Shell.
It's just the start. Let's talk.
Today. Thanks for hanging out with us.
Fuck you.
Okay.
Perfect.
That's Abdullah.
Hey.
That's Devin.
Hello.
I'm Brandon. And Ghost in the Shell, gentlemen.
Yes. Ghost in the Shell, gentlemen. One of my favorite new movies. The better of the two movies that I watched yesterday.
All right. Let's start off, if you will, with initial reactions to the flick. Abdullah, you just saw it yesterday?
Yes.
And your thoughts? Good, sir. What do you feel?
I really enjoyed it. I thought visually it was excellent. I think Clint Mansell did the soundtrack, and that's usually going to be pretty good. And it was this time. I enjoyed that. It was just a very like slick visual experience, and a lot of the technology that they used, sort of this, you know, retro futuristic almost at times, especially with the cars, which were sort of, you know, like 80s cars almost.
Yeah, very reminiscent of the anime.
Yeah, so that was really cool. And I feel like, I've never been to Tokyo, but I feel like it kind of looks like that already. But I just thought it was visually a great experience. I thought the pacing could have been a little bit better. Mm-hmm. I thought it lagged at times and then like picked up at times. But overall, it was a good movie. I enjoyed it. Yeah.
Sir Devin?
Yeah, I also saw it yesterday, and I thought it was pretty good. It was nothing, no big complaints.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't seen the original,
which is hilarious because we did a show
or anything
where you were on the panel. We did the hackers tournament and you were on the panel, and I think you put it through over something in one situation, so it shows you how good that movie was up against was. It's like, I picked Ghost in the Shell because this is so much shit.
But you always gotta manipulate for that win though.
Oh yeah, right? Totally. I respect it.
But it was good. It was really good. Visually stunning. Mm-hmm. Beyond the obvious, you know, ton of really impressive CGI stuff, a lot of the practical stuff was really cool too.
Absolutely.
Really well done.
Geisha robots and stuff.
Yeah. Really cool, yeah. Oh, terrifying.
And
the
first one that she destroys was, and like even with the tea that she pours out and just looks down at him, just like, whoa, this is creepy.
Shoots out those spider legs.
Yeah, like starts scurrying backwards with the guy in tow. It's like, man, this is a creepy shit.
Why did they build you to be able to do that?
Oh, man.
They knew Major was coming.
Yep.
We've got a normal mode and terrifying mode. Just switch it to terrifying if you want to scare the shit out of yourself for some reason.
Oh yeah, and the guy that she kidnaps is Michael Wincott, by the way. Shout out to your favorite movie, The Crow, Devin.
Favorite
movie of all time. Mm. For me, I really liked it. You know, I am a somewhat big fan of particularly the first two feature length Ghost in the Shell animated films. And I really liked this. I didn't find that the departures were too egregious. I thought that they paid a lot of respectful homage to the source material, to the manga, and to the properties that I know, which are obviously considerably less than a lot of fans of the series. So one thing I wanted to mention with regards, 'cause did you guys see it in 3D?
Yes.
Okay, so I saw it in 3D, and I absolutely—it's probably the best 3D like water effects I've ever seen. I remember going into, I think it was Days of Future Past, X-Men Days of Future Past, and that opening sequence and that bleak dystopian future, it looked so fucking blah. Like all of the 3D elements were just whatever. I don't care. Like, leave me alone. Just get to the fucking movie. And this film, I was kind of, like you guys have already alluded to, I was so engaged by the eye candy of a lot of parts of it. And those little touches, things like the water splashing, the rain falling.
Right.
And even though it's this dystopian future with this evil organization that's kind of got their hand in the government and these sorts of things, it's somehow, because of a lot of the visuals, it somehow kept me very optimistic with the storyline. Yeah, I was quite a fan of the experience. I'll say that, of the 3D. It's probably one of the most memorable 3D experiences that I've had. It wasn't overt.
Yeah, I would agree.
It was just tasteful.
It's used well. Yeah, yeah. For sure.
Yeah. Now, sorry.
No, I was just saying yes.
Okay. Good. So yeah, Devin, I highly recommend you check it out in 3D.
I would too, yeah. It's probably a movie worth watching twice, yeah. I would say, yeah.
Yeah.
It's good.
I want to kind of knock down some of the things that have kind of inflamed the internet a little bit in this first segment, if you will.
Yeah.
Obviously, the casting of Scarlett Johansson, not everyone's favorite for the role of Major, and perhaps even what they did with the character, not everyone's super pleased with, and her motivations, et cetera, et cetera. What were your take on these elements? So, for example, the casting, how did she do in the role, and also what their choices with the character of the Major?
I think the whole thing was kind of blown out of proportion.
Like, oh, totally.
It's not, who cares? Mm-hmm. Just cast the best person. And I don't, like, who cares? Mm-hmm. I'm just over it. Over this constant babble of, oh, you can't do this because you're white or whatever else. And it's like, just stop. Just watch the movie. Mm-hmm. Shut up. I'm done.
I think it's, I mean, obviously it's an easy one to pick out. As being problematic.
Yeah.
But I think when you look at Hollywood in general, I think you see that same problem reflected in almost every movie anyways.
Yeah.
So it's like...
You just had a movie where Matt Damon saved China.
Yeah, I mean, so. But there was outcry over that as well. But I guess what I'm saying is more just the general focus on, like, you know, white people in film.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's pretty, you know, it's... If you're... I guess I'm just saying, like to point out this is a problem. It's low hanging fruit.
Yeah.
The industry as a whole needs to make a lot of changes in general, but you know,
yeah.
To pick out the one movie that actually ended up having quite a diverse cast.
Yeah.
You know, maybe it's just a little bit of misdirected anger.
Yeah.
You know.
I also found it very strange. Go ahead.
95% of the people complaining aren't the target demographic.
No.
They're not going to watch this movie.
No.
The people who are going to watch it and like it and watch the original don't have a problem.
No.
They're gonna judge the movie on the merits of the movie itself rather than the fact that they didn't stay pure or something by, you know, casting a Japanese person. It's, I don't know.
It's funny too. I will get back to what I was going to say to your comment, Devin. But it's funny too to jump on the back of what you're saying, Abdullah. It's interesting that when I talk to people leading up to the release of this film, anyone who had seen the anime films and television shows and all of the properties that you can get your hands on for it. Said one thing that was very optimistic about the film, with it being Scarlett Johansson. And on the flip side, the people who hadn't seen any of those also, and maybe it's just the people that I talked to, but also were very optimistic in that what they wanted to do was, for people who hadn't seen it, they weren't going to absorb any Ghost in the Shell materials until they watched the film. They wanted to judge it on its own merit. And then because of all the outcry, and then they were going to go and watch everything else and contextualize the argument.
Yeah.
But they wanted to know if it was a good movie first. For the people who had seen it, seen a lot of the material, or even read the manga, this sort of thing, a lot of them said to me, and it's a stupid thing to say perhaps, but for anyone who's familiar with the character of the Major knows that she doesn't stay in her body all that long. And she, with the help of the puppet master, kind of, or rather, merges with him and becomes a like an entity that can kind of just travel through technology per se. And so she does like take physical forms, yeah. But a lot of the time she can jump into any artificial body that's not currently occupied, right. And that does play a role. Say, for example, in one of the Ghost in the Shell movies, where you're following Bateau the majority of the film, and only shows up in the third act.
Right.
Although her presence is felt, right. You know, throughout the flick. So that was an interesting point where it was like, well, who cares what she looks like, because she can look like anything. Mm-hmm. And that was cool. And so in what they did with the character in the opening sequence, although maybe it's not 100% true to the origins of the Major, what they've actually done is shifted it to make her a part of the origins of Lycuse, Michael Pitt's character, in completely his origins. And then they've kind of done this weird amalgamation where they've put a little bit of the puppet master into Kuze, which is, these are all cool things. These are all really cool things for someone who has seen these other Ghost in the Shell properties, right. that are going to go like, wow, you know, someone has taken all of the, it's like when someone releases a cover album, like Me First in the Gimme Gimmes, and takes like a punk spin on all of these classic rock and pop songs or something like that. And you go, oh, wow, like this is really, you know, tastefully done and thoughtful. And they obviously respect the original material. And I felt very much the same way as only a peripheral fan of the series going into this film. You know, and I was so curious. I really wanted Nick here, and you know, we talked about off air that he's stuck elsewhere, unfortunately, because I wanted to hear his opinion of it, because he was one of those ones in the camp where he said, "Who fucking cares what she looks like? Because she could look like anything."
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, she's essentially a presence.
Yeah,
yeah,
she is a ghost in the shell.
Yeah.
By the way, let's get into some of the nitty gritty here of this film. First act dragged a little bit for me, sorry. Yeah. Like you said, Abdullah. and one of the things that drove me insane, the opening scroll was minimal, didn't bother me at all. Just, okay, quick refresher for anyone that hasn't seen any materials in this franchise before, no problem. When they verbally deliver a line that goes, "Your ghost, your soul," reaffirming that that's what the ghost is. If you are so fucking dense that you can't figure out ghost in a shell,
yeah.
is like a
something
ascension
that's stuck around, yeah.
entity mm-hmm. inside yeah. of a fucking shell of a
right.
human being.
Yes,
if you can't figure that out,
yeah. it's the
this isn't a movie
conscience
for you.
Or the presence inside
exactly.
a robot.
Yeah.
I actually assumed that dialogue was like an homage to the original. Like those were lines just lifted directly out.
They almost are.
The case, or?
Well, no, that's not true. They're not.
I guess some of it might get lost in the translation anyways, though, right?
So here's the
that
difference.
Line might be more powerful elsewhere, because it certainly wasn't in the movie.
No, it felt it's like felt they were just
so
like,
weird.
Hey, anyone who hasn't seen this, when we say the word ghost, we mean soul, wink, wink, and then they move along.
Yeah.
But and that's okay. I'm going to let that one go, because that is a creative decision, perhaps, in the sense of you may be exposing – when you have a Scarlett Johansson action film coming out, your target demographic grows considerably over those in North America who are consuming manga, for
yes.
example.
Yeah.
And then even in other markets like in Europe and so forth, it again is it's niche to consume this kind of content. Whereas, say for example, in Japan, of course, Ghost in the Shell would be, you know,
yeah, 75% of the gross is foreign.
Yeah, so. which is really cool.
Yeah.
Where are we at, by the way, in terms of gross? This movie was about 110 million to make.
It says 124 here.
Okay,
I guess so that's as of today.
Yeah, so it's
yeah.
made as
so
of April 9th.
Made it back and added another 14, 15 million.
Yeah, so
it's pretty
you know,
solid.
we'll see where it goes from here. I hope that more people are encouraged to go out and check it out.
It's kind of it's flopped a little in domestic.
It took a pretty big dip in second weekend, which isn't that unusual.
Yeah, it's also niche-ish. I mean, it's like a tiny bit niche. I mean, it's Scarlett Johansson, which is what the draw is. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, it's not a topic.
I mean, no one's
that
coming
a
out
lot
to see
people
beat Tekashi. Love that guy. Whatever.
Fine.
I often wonder what other people even see it as from the outside, you know, because I mean, going into it, you know, based on the way that the movie's been marketed, I mean, it could be anything from like a cerebral kind of Blade Runner-esque, sort of a film to like a balls out action movie.
Yeah.
And, you know, it does
it's kind
of
both.
Yeah. I mean, I say it sits more to the side of the noir, but, I don't know. I mean, maybe that could factor into why people aren't, you know.
Here's a question for you on that, along those lines. The original material is obviously a big inspiration for something like The Matrix, and a very overt one. Now, while The Matrix, say, for example, deals with the ideas of, philosophies on Western religions and these sorts of things, and the idea of destiny and so forth. It's
free will, sort of thing.
Exactly.
Sure. Yeah.
What a lot of say, for example, the first Ghost in the Shell feature length animated film deals with is what is human, right? Mm. So, for example, a line that is in this film that is kind of from the source material to the extent of that I know, is the idea that the Major knows that she's not human, but she is treated as human, right?
She appears human, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of, and I'd like to at some point in the show go through a lot of the similarities between the material that I know. I'm probably going to miss some because, again, I'm not super, super familiar with all of the Ghost in the Shell stuff. But from what I know, I love the respect that was given to a lot of great moments throughout multiple films, you know, that I've seen and properties that I've seen. I've watched a few episodes of the show where she's the little girl with purple hair and so forth or whatever. But yeah, but for now, I'll just say, like, you know, I felt at home. And even with the, like, say, for example, the change of the name of the Major, like, her name was Killian in this, and you only saw her actual name, you know, on the gravestone at the end.
Yeah.
Like, I'm cool with all of that. Like, you know, like, I don't need them to refer to her as Major Kusanagi the whole movie. Like,
right.
And then on the flip side, bringing it back that way is like a little bit of a, because obviously that would be wrong. That would be like, well, you're an artificial person.
Right.
You could
have
a Japanese last name.
Yeah.
Who cares?
Yeah.
But, I don't know. I like the little touch, little homage.
Little nod,
But I didn't like I didn't mind the name change or anything like that. Nothing threw me out of this movie. Like, like you said off air, Abdullah, like you came out of it and you're like, that was a movie.
That was good.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed it. Like, I went in with actually quite low expectations just because I looked at the Rotten Tomatoes page. Mm-hmm. I don't know how these people do their, like, there's not much wrong with this movie, I feel.
No.
It's pretty solid.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, like, we talked about Power Rangers and all we could do is trash it, but I don't have that much.
Which you'll
negative
hear next week.
I don't have that much negative to say about this movie. I thought it was quite good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think there was not like a ton of dialogue, but whatever there was pretty effective. It was pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
The play between Scarlett Johansson and Pilo Asbeck.
Batu's
character. Like, yeah. That was really good.
I was
worried really
about
those together.
Fucking eyes. And I've heard people complain a lot leading up to seeing it about those eyes. And you know, as much as I didn't super like the mechanism of him getting them, didn't mind the eyes at all. And it was because they showed him without them initially. Mm-hmm. If they had just gone in the movie and had those stupid eyes, he'd be like, oh, fuck. Yeah. But because you saw him without them, that actually worked really well. Like, that was a brilliant idea on the part of the screenwriters and the, you know, the team working on the film all around, in terms of the direction, everything.
You were worried because it was,
I didn't think people could acclimate. I thought they would be like, this is stupid.
Well, and it would have taken something away, right? I feel like eyes are how you relate to people sometimes in movies, right?
Absolutely.
Which is why you have close-up shots and the reactions are all there. Mm-hmm.
Money shots and whatnot.
Yeah, but I agree that... I was gonna roll over that.
I have to think about that one.
I think him having eyes at the start kind of helps you like him to start with, you know. So,
and I like introduction of his relationship with the dogs, because that's actually that's the one that you follow him more in.
Yeah.
Where she, like we were talking about, that she shows up only in the third act. I can't think of the name of any of these things because it's always just like Ghost in the Shell. I just watch it. But because I can't keep this shit straight. They always have like weird convoluted names after the, like, I literally,
and you have to read subtitles the whole time.
No, they'll revoice them.
Really?
They dub
okay.
them
in
English. In English. but yeah, like that's from another one where he's there's this great scene where he's taken in this stray, right, into his house, and he goes and he buys
bones,
yeah, like food every day from this, like, he buys like the hot, most expensive food and all this stuff, and he doesn't like people, but he likes this dog.
Yeah, she asks
right?
him like, you hate people, why do you like dogs?
Yeah, and I love that. Both in the film, I think it kind of plays a role, if I remember correctly, but correct me if I'm wrong. And in the material that I'm sourcing here, him going to get that every day puts him in a little bit of peril in terms of they know where he's going to be and so forth. But I might be remembering that wrong. But I do. There's a great scene in the anime that I'm referencing that's like a great shootout sequence in a fucking grocery store where he's like blowing people's legs off and stuff. And you're like, oh my god, this is a cartoon.
The scene where he gets the eyes, I thought that made that even more like the fact that they had the opportunity to do that scene was pretty good, because the you sort of. You know, you initially see the eyes and you kind of feel bad for him because it looks a little bit, you know.
Rough.
Yeah.
And then he's like, I can see you.
Yeah. And then he kind of smiles about it and you're like, okay, like he's cool with it. And then at the end of the scene, he says that.
How many fingers am I holding up?
You know, can you feed the dogs for me? I don't want to scare them. And then it's like, oh, back to that point.
Yeah,
again.
Exactly.
And it just, it feel like, I don't know, you really feel for him. It's
I really like that character.
Loved
he was
the
great.
Character.
He was a great character. Loved him. And he played it really well. Mm-hmm. I don't know this actor, but I liked him a lot in this.
Yeah, he was great. You know, I love the bar sequence, that first big, like, really cool shootout sequence that they have where he's at the bar and the guy with the robotic arms, like, what do you want? He's like, I think he just says beer or something. I can't
remember. Yeah, yeah. He's like, I'm just here for the girls and the beer, and then he just sits down and goes beer,
and then the fight sequence that is awesome.
It's really good.
Yeah. And they didn't shy away from the fact that you know, one thing that makes Bateau so special among all these characters, how he relates to the Major, is that you never can tell if his, you know, quote unquote love for her is a romantic thing or a respect thing, but because of that, this or if it's a familial thing, and generally, I think for me, I've always sided on the familial side. Like,
yeah, I didn't see any romantic, and I was really glad that nothing happened.
No,
I was really glad.
Well, yeah, and it's so interesting too, because over the years, he's obviously had to watch her like partner up with Puppet Master, I guess, and you know, so that might not be. And in this movie, obviously, her origin is that. She knows Michael Pitt's former self, etc. So, and I like them drawing from the origins of Kuze, which we were looking up a little bit and talking about off air. for the storyline. I was really, really worried about the whole revenge flick element of it, being that this has always been a piece that deals with philosophical issues and very human issues, and has been dialogue driven. Even though there's these beautiful, visceral action sequences, it's very much very important to balance that with long, thorough dialogue.
Well, yeah, I mean, you really the thing. Movies like this make you think, you know, and like you said about the original source material, it touches on things like free will, what's human, religion, for example, where does that come from? And like when I watch this sort of sci-fi, for example, like Mr. Robot or that movie Her, which is also Scarlett Johansson.
Yep.
Anything with sort of AI or robots, that's way more fascinating to me than action scenes. Mm-hmm. This movie did the action scenes really well, but I think it did the other stuff particularly well as well. Mm-hmm. And that's way more important. So I was happy with that. I came out, you know, thinking about things and, you know, yeah, what's human? Where does the machine end and the human start?
Mm-hmm. I was a little bit worried about how that talking in their head thing was going to work in live action.
Right.
And I really did like it a lot, except for when they continuously tell everyone to switch over to it.
Yeah, switch to comms.
Yeah, that kind of – but didn't they say like mind communication or something at some point? Didn't Beat Takashi have a line like that?
Yeah, right before that shooting scene where he survives somehow.
When I saw that scene, I don't know, you can say yay or nay on this, Devin, but I said when Devin sees this, he's going to love this scene.
Yeah.
This is the car scene where Beat Takashi has the suit, the briefcase. He gets in the car and you're thinking the car's going to explode. Like,
yeah.
There's a thought in your mind like, oh, maybe this car's going to blow up within a minute.
He's just
and then
waiting
you're thinking,
for them.
Like Aramaki makes it through like a lot of – he's still alive, obviously.
Yes.
Like, he never dies.
Yeah. He's a badass.
Yeah, and this is the most badass I've ever seen him, by the way.
Yeah.
And then of course you see these two guys come up and he just fucking blows them away with that fucking revolver. And I'm like, Jesus Christ, he's like Dirty Harry. It's brilliant.
Well,
and
I turned and said
to everyone that I was there with, I'm like, Devin's going to fucking love this scene. He's going to fucking love this scene.
That was a great scene.
Yeah,
as well as his other badass scene, which was like where he was super quick draw when Cutter comes to like confront him.
Yeah.
And or he goes to Cutter to tell him he's arrested.
To tell him he's spoken to the prime minister.
He's going to go to jail. And Cutter pulls his gun and he turns around and fucking blows him away.
Yeah.
And then Cutter gets up and then still kills him.
Yeah.
He ends up killing Cutter rather.
Yeah.
But yeah, that scene was really good too.
Oh yeah. And the water in that scene was fucking cool.
It was really cool. I like almost couldn't tell how far down he'd gone.
Mm-hmm.
Like that was, and that sounds like a bad thing, but in this case it was good. I liked it.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was really cool.
Awesome, awesome. Yeah, a lot of really cool visuals in this flick. Do you guys mind taking a little break, coming back, and talking about some of the scenes that I wanted to throw you, some of the scenes that came over from some of the anime properties that I recognize, see how you felt about some of them?
That's good.
Cool?
Yeah.
All right. However, you're taking part in this episode, remember to reach out to us on social media. We're at Merwell Podcast, at MRML Podcast on Twitter. And you can also reach us at facebook.com/moviesroommylife or by hashtagging moviesroommylife wherever you're talking about movies. All right, so we're back. And let's run through some of the moments that, at least for me, I recognized as visual transition or translations over from some of the anime films. And I'd like your thoughts on some of them, guys, if that would be all right.
Sure.
That would be agreeable.
Let's do it.
One of my favorite...
Sorry, Devin. Devin
was
laughing,
say,
and I was like, "What?"
Tres agriable. But then I didn't get the chance, so I just had to laugh to myself a bit. Tres agriable.
French people must hate us. The amount of fucking Fringlish we speak on this show.
Oh God.
Oh, okay. The
supposed to English.
Yeah.
The scene, one of my favorite scenes in the first anime film is them chasing down the garbage truck. They don't realize that's the garbage truck that's transmitting these hacking messages and stuff like that. And it culminates in this fight sequence on the water. In the first film, it's Puppet Master in a shell, per se, or that's a lie. It's him taking over a petty criminal's mind and rewriting his memories, as well as the garbage man. Which in this film they just control the garbage man, and then the garbage man is the guy in this film, right?
Right.
So it's two different people in the anime, but in this one they amalgamated into one guy. That fight sequence on the water with the camouflage, I love that sequence.
Yeah.
I think that is so fucking cool. Obviously, the biggest difference between the two is when she comes back to being visible. In the anime, Bato kind of throws a coat on her, kind of acknowledging that she is nude. And I kind of like that because even though it's like an artificial body and this is what she looks like in that, you know, it's not a sexual thing.
Yeah, let's not sexualize it. Yeah, let's make her just a fighter.
Yeah. I do like the idea of the jacket in the sense of the humanity, or it's just a reaffirmation in the original content of the of Bato being treating her like a human.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're not a machine, you're not an entity that's like separate from us. But in this film it plays really well because you just have this amazing action sequence. She like gets in his fucking face and then walks away.
Yeah.
Like fucking Dirty Harry.
Well, she wants to kill him and then Bato reminds her that they have to keep him alive.
Mm-hmm.
I thought the costume design in this movie was great.
Mm-hmm.
Like even just from a personal level, I really liked the jackets that she wore. It's kind of cool.
Yeah.
Sorry to go off topic.
One thing I did want to ask about that scene though is why the fuck does a garbage man have that kind of camo? Like no one else in the films other than one guy from Section 6 has that camo in the first one, and I can't remember who else. But she's like even in Section 9, she's the only one with that camo. But a garbage man has it on his jacket.
Yeah.
I thought that was a little – it was an interesting choice. But they wanted it in the film because they wanted the visuals. They wanted that stunning visual of like him running down the alley. And then you see the plane passing over top, which is really
fucking that was
cool.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. That was really cool. I enjoyed that a lot.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Looked amazing.
The big like war plane looking thing. Yeah, it was great.
Super cool. And then this brilliant fight that plays out.
Yeah.
Right off of that scene, another one that's kind of transitioning from the original film again, anime film, was the interrogation scene where the news is broken to the guy, the garbage man, like, this isn't who you are.
Yeah.
You don't have a wife or daughter.
Right.
All of this stuff. I thought it played really different than the source material, though, where in the source material you – or at least the movie, you have these two kind of Men in Black type characters that you only see their shoulders, but they're delivering it to this guy and being like, this is the situation. You're never going to be the same kind of thing. And almost very sympathetic, even though they're these faceless bureaucrats. And then you have Scarlett Johansson in this film as the major... just being an absolute asshole to this guy.
Yeah.
And it was fucking great. It was like, no, you're never going to get your memory back. So, you know, fuck you.
Yeah.
Live with it.
And he decides that it's not worth continuing living.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, fuck it.
Well, first Kuze takes him over.
Oh, yeah.
And they have that great scene where she actually physically walks in to the room.
Yeah.
Which is cool.
Yeah.
What did you guys think of that interrogation cell too? I thought that was a really cool idea where you can kind of bring up a like sand or whatever version of yourself.
Yeah. And then they had the really cool. Like he was on a leash pretty much, and then his feet were there so that he couldn't go too far. I don't know why they had the leash, like to give you the option of opting out.
Yeah,
just kill yourself.
Well, you got to keep the numbers down in prison.
Yeah,
in future Japan. You know, you got to. It's a budgetary choice.
Yeah,
like if you want to kill yourself, just
maybe it would also stop him from falling asleep. So
Oh, true. Yeah. Deprivation. Yeah. Okay. Sensory deprivation. Yeah. Makes sense.
Didn't they also say something about the fact that they were, like, putting some kind of, like, a...
Oh, yeah. Maybe it's those wires or the things in his back of his neck.
Because okay. they
four
had...
Four holes, yeah.
It was... Because that was the way Kuze hacked in, right? Was mm-hmm. The lie detector that they...
put in his neck.
Put so, in him.
Yeah. Interesting. So it's got to keep him in place to use it. That makes sense.
That scene where Major does the deep dive.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That was a cool scene.
Really yeah. cool visual.
Yeah. I enjoyed that a lot. Mm-hmm. And to use that to sort of go back to the place where the orphans lived.
Mm-hmm.
That was cool.
Yeah.
And that's how you found out. So and even like her trying to climb out when there's monsters are grabbing at her.
Mm-hmm.
Well, she's being hacked.
Yeah, it looks great.
That was cool. Yeah. It's a really good scene.
And that deep dive is obviously something very reminiscent of what she did with the puppet master before merging with him in the anime.
Yeah.
So that's
okay.
kind of where that comes from. And again, Bato being this kind of brotherly observer kind of situation
right.
where he's very concerned
get her out.
Wants to get her out
yeah.
and so forth, plays the same way. Mm-hmm. Really cool. Maybe it's just the, well, can we talk about the end a little bit? Because it's
sure.
another scene that, just the tank, not the, we won't go into the details yet if you guys don't want, but that tank scene again, also reminiscent of the first, flick where they're transporting the puppet master and the tank is kind of the separator between the major making it to the puppet master and not. So, and Bato shows up late with his big gun and so forth and actually gets his fucking arm blown off, which I really wanted to see in this movie. I wanted to see him lose an arm as well. I don't know why. He already lost his eyes, but I just... this guy, I just want to see him lose an arm. I don't know why.
It was only Major who loses
Major
an arm.
Major loses
yeah.
an arm in this, yeah. yeah so
that was a really... it was a really grotesque scene.
Yeah.
Like, tendons ripping, and
mm-hmm.
it was
really cool.
Done really well. She, like, throws the top off and loses her arm. That was really, really well done.
Mm-hmm.
Enjoyed that.
I love that she actually does go diving. Another thing that
yeah.
she does, it's like her moment of peace and tranquility. I love that kind of idea.
That dialogue that she has with Bato on the boat.
Fishing.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm just fishing. But then, she says it's really scary.
Mm-hmm.
And then he asks, why do you do it? Because there's nothing down there. You know, there's
mm-hmm.
there's no data streaming. There's nothing,
mm-hmm.
you know, I can be at peace.
Disconnect.
But
yeah.
but it is scary. So
yeah.
that was kind of interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Really cool. And that, and in that, you know, for everyone who isn't in love with the idea of Scarlett Johansson playing the character of the Major, I was very, very impressed with how much she portrayed the Major that I know. In a completely
cool.
different kind of plot
yeah.
than what I expected out of this film. And there was a lot of moments where I looked at her and said, like, that is the fucking Major that I know. It doesn't matter what her fucking last name is or, you know,
right.
what her, you know, what her nationality of her shell is.
Right.
It's, like, that's the fucking Major. And I thought that was really cool, you know, mm-hmm. to be able to – it's obvious to me that she does have a love for this property or,
right.
you know, or at very least dove into the idea of playing this character.
Yes.
And found things that she could relate to and built that character around that. So when you have that, you know, you're finding pieces of yourself in this character or whatever it is, and she's pushing that out on screen. And there's a lot of very powerful moments like that
yeah.
where the noise of the internet with all of the complaints of cultural appropriation and
yeah.
these sorts of things, you know, which may be valid. But like you said, Devin, I don't think in this case it really is because of the diverse cast, et cetera. It kind of all goes away because you recognize this character that for those who did love the properties, you're seeing that character
right.
on screen.
I thought the Major, the character development was excellent. Well, the character development was the plot
mm-hmm.
essentially. And I thought it was really, really well done. And just the sort of crisis of self she went through,
mm-hmm.
After, after Dr. Ule almost killed her and then like set her free. That was really cool, including the scene where she goes to meet her mother for all intents and purposes.
Mm-hmm.
And when she asks her, who are you? And she goes, I don't know, and walks out. I thought that was a pretty powerful scene.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Even just her sitting there and having tea with her mom, mm-hmm. And the mom not knowing that this is, you know, her daughter, mm-hmm. In a different body. That was a cool scene. Mm-hmm. And it was necessary for her to go there and find out how this happened.
Yeah.
Because she'd been lied to. So yeah, it was a pretty like sort of sweet scene in a movie that was, not that sweet at times.
And I like the idea of her kind of just telling her mother, not by being like, I am Motoko or whatever. Like, yeah. She's just like, you don't have to come here anymore.
Yeah.
And she sees her at the cemetery.
Yeah.
Doesn't tell her why, doesn't anything. It's just like, you don't have to come here anymore. And
the mom knows now. She's like, I know.
Yeah.
It's like, this is so sweet.
Like, it's a good moment. Yeah. You know? For a sci-fi flick, that's what you need. When we talk about movies like Blade Runner, for example, or like Terminator 2, and we reference these moments of just...
levity and human, like,
yeah, and especially from characters that you don't maybe perceive fully as being human. So, for example, right. To draw a parallel between the Major to someone like Roy Batty, or to the Terminator, for example, like, that's one of those kind of now I know why you cry, but something I can never do moments, or like Tears and Rain moment at the end of Blade Runner, these sorts of things that kind of is this movie's that moment where it's just like, you know, you don't have to come here anymore.
Yeah.
And I really did like it as a moviegoer, doesn't have anything fucking do with this franchise or anything right. else. Just like, that's a good moment.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And sweet. Also because it gives you an interesting character if the series does continue where it's just, she just pops in and has a fucking tea with her mom.
Yeah.
And that's kind of a cool, character moment for the Major, who's very staunch and serious and driven, and then just to have her pop in for tea, you know, is kind of a nice juxtaposition being created there, right. and it's a fun moment for audiences, etc. So
I like how the movie made me feel at the end, which was like, this person's at peace now.
Mm-hmm.
Which was really nice, and she moved beyond her physical body to realize that, you know, it's who I am isn't the shell.
Yeah.
You know, and like, this movie could have ended, you know, with, I don't know,
not gunfire.
Yeah. But it didn't. It ended with a nice hug between person and her mom.
Yeah.
It was really sweet.
When Guze and her are speaking at the end, and he's like, you know, we can leave this place. Like, it's not, you know, like, come with me.
It was really sad to see him die.
I'm not done yet.
She's just like, no, like, this is where I want to be. I thought that was like a really, really powerful scene too.
But it is really interesting that he still decides to kind of gift her all of his access. And I love that.
Yeah.
That's really, really, because of the connection that they have. It's a really nice moment to say. So, for example, he offers her this idea of transcendence, and she opts out of it. But he still, you know, it's kind of like, well, here's your consolation prize. But he does it in a little bit more heartfelt manner, almost the idea that he can still always be connected to her or vice versa, for example, which I quite like.
I wasn't sure, I guess their sort of relationship or friendship was probably more like siblings than it was anything else, right? Like, I really like how sort of desexualized the character was.
Yeah.
Because I just wanted to see a sci-fi. I didn't want to see a, You know,
love story in this.
Well, there's love. There's love, but there, it's familial. It's familial, yeah. And it shows how unconditional that is. Mm-hmm. It's really sweet. Yeah. And like you were saying, where she's able to take other forms in the original material,
mm-hmm.
like the only thing that matters is your brain and your ghost, I guess. Yeah. Yeah. So that was really cool.
Yeah,
I enjoyed that.
Before we go to break here, and then I want to actually come back and do a little bit of a quick thought experiment, kind of. But first, can we do quick favorite characters, favorite scenes from this flick?
Sure, now.
We'll do them in tandem.
Okay, cool.
So, Abdullah, you want to kick us off, favorite character?
Yeah, I would say both Major and Batu,
yeah,
and them together,
yeah,
really great. I liked Aramaki.
Yeah,
he's good. I liked most of the characters.
Please don't take them all.
Okay, I'll say the Major.
Yeah.
She went through a bunch of stuff, and she was, you know, persistent and got her stuff done. And then she was better for it at the end. And I really like that.
And your runner-up is Beto?
Yeah, let's go with that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Pourquoi?
I liked their relationship, their friendship. Yeah. It made me feel happy. It was good. And I think he was like a conflicted, sort of contradictory character in this, especially with the dogs, where he clearly had emotions and feelings, but he had to come off as kind of cold and detached when dealing with humans, just because of the nature of his job.
Yeah, I like the moment where she kind of accuses him in a subtle way of being a company man.
Yeah,
and she's like, he kind of gives her this like, are you fucking kidding me? kind of thing. In any case, Devin, favorite character?
I really like the sort of it's kind of a not like super commonly used plot device, but I don't know, it's not. Not that it's that original or anything like that, but the idea of Kuze being, you know, he's this guy that they're after for the whole movie. They're hunting him down and, you know, he's the bad guy. And then, it, you know, it makes that flip and you realize, no, like he's, you know, everybody that you thought was good is actually a bad guy. And now, you know. Yeah.
I love that he was falling apart too, and Michael Pitt did it really, really well. I really like him.
The voice stammers are really cool. Like at first I was like, wait, like is the audio fucking up? No, it's just pretty cool.
you're like waving to the projectionist.
but it was well done, and I just like I said, I just kind of love that. That idea of just, you know, the, there, you know, this character's revenge is really the only, you know, his justified revenge is what makes him appear to be a bad guy. And then, you know, it all kind of resolves properly.
For me, I was with you as far like I you know I like the Major and Batu was another standout because I got a real man crush on the character.
Yeah.
Because they made the eye thing work, he was good for me. But I gotta go with Aramaki. Like I love Bitakashi. I think he's cool as fuck. And he's got this real Clint Eastwood vibe in this film. That's probably the most I've ever liked. You know, the leader of Section 9, he's always kind of seemed like a bureaucrat to me and everything. And so I really, really liked that portrayal of the character where the team came first. It was cool. It was, you know, it was like a fraternity almost. It was, which is a little weird, but like, you know,
I was very sympathetic towards
like a family, I think is a better way of saying it.
Like during that scene that we talked about where his car gets shot up.
Yeah.
I felt really like I was like, oh no, don't let him die.
Yeah.
So
and even him mouthing off,
yeah.
when they're, you know, talking about the Major and you know, Cutter's saying that this is our property, et cetera. And,
right.
And fucking Aramaki's like, okay, yeah, fuck you. Like, I don't answer to you. I answer to the prime minister.
Yeah.
And I want to quickly give a shout out to Togusa. Like, I, you know, one thing about the character of Togusa that I absolutely love is that he's brought into Section 9 because he doesn't have any implants or anything. So even they want a cop. He's just a cop. He's a family man. There's nothing fancy about him. Like, in his origins before this film.
This is the guy with the mullet.
With the mullet.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he only has the implants that are like mandatory to be in Section 9.
Right.
But because they want someone who doesn't think like all of them. They want someone and somehow in this flick, and you know, as much, so this is why I didn't pick him, because you can't give it up to the character. It is written in the character, like the moment that he's fucking eating noodles and everyone else just knows they're coming from the sensories, perception, and like all the stuff and the communication. He's sitting in a restaurant eating noodles. He sees like the reflection in like a security camera or a mirror or something.
Yeah.
And he just like whips out this big fucking gun and takes him out. And he, oh, that's another thing about him is he loves that old revolver.
Yeah.
You know, he's real fucking Clint Eastwood too.
Right.
And, I really like that they keep going back to how human he is and how that is a strength. Like, his vulnerability is his strength. His strength to the team is that. And they talk about that several times, and that's the culmination of that.
Right.
And it's going to make him such an interesting character if they continue on this franchise, which I very much hope they do, you know.
I actually loved Bateau's scene in that that whole thing where he's just like sitting in that chair, and you see the dog, that like
he's the dog, he's there with the dog,
and you see that look in his face when he notices. He's just like,
yeah, the
just
guy's coming,
little like, bit of the, a quizzical dog. Look,
and then it just cuts to him
on the road.
Yeah, I love that. Like, I love
just,
that.
You just you know,
it's like I dealt with it.
It's good enough. Don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. It's so good.
It was a very Bateau thing, like to just cut it out.
Yeah. Oh, totally, totally. I really, really like that. Favorite scene, gentlemen.
I think you're going to take the water fight scene, so I'll leave. No.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I'll go with that one.
Plus, I'm joking to death right now, so you know, if I don't make it to the end of this podcast, someone should talk about it.
Yeah, it's still coming out. The show must go on. Brandon died this episode. literally. But, that scene was excellent. It was really, really well done. And the scene directly previous where he's running and you see, like we said, the plane flying overhead. Just really well done. The water effects were incredible. Her, like, cool disappearing and coming back.
Buildings.
Yeah. That was really awesome. I gotta give that my favorite scene. I really enjoyed it.
One thing that Paul said to me about this was, like, I see all these buildings and it's clear that people must live there, but you don't see any fucking people in the daytime. So, like, it's barely anyone in the street. It's brilliant. Yeah.
Like, there's only that one dude who sort of hits on Major and gets told off by Batu. But,
everything seems to happen indoors. It's great. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's all dark. Works.
Yeah. Really cool. Good.
Yeah.
Devin, your favorite scene, sir?
Duffy. Probably the bar.
Bar shootout
was just really.
They're kicking the shit out of everyone. Chain handcuffed to a pole,
running on the walls and stuff.
Yeah,
I really like the juxtaposition of like this dystopian future against the bright lights of Tokyo and advertising everywhere.
Yeah.
It's kind of cool. It's been done before.
Yeah. You said a little reminiscent of Blade Runner.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, like
new
I was
Blade Runner coming out this year.
Yeah. New Blade Runner soon. 2049.
Yeah. Like I was saying, when we
one
were
of your favorites,
directed by Denis Villeneuve. Yeah. Yeah. He's fantastic.
When we were talking about it earlier. I don't know. I mean, I know it's probably true to the, it's just a, you know, them staying true to the original, but it seemed maybe a little bit over the top.
Yeah.
A bit much sometimes the cityscapes. I don't know. Like when you've got like a, you know, a giant head advertising something that's it's not even connected to a building. It's just on its own. And it's just like 30 stories tall. It's like, who's advertising this way?
Yeah.
If it costs that much that you need, you know, 200-story skyscrapers just like to have enough room for people to live, who's buying the 30-story head with the fan comes out? A lot of real estate.
A lot of real estate moguls, yeah.
But I don't know. It's a small nitpicky thing.
Yeah. A lot of people either loved or hated the opening sequence, which is very much reminiscent of the opening sequence, which is a lot more badass in the anime in this particular instance, but still very, very cool, of her diving off the building, like removing her jacket and diving off the building and then going invisible. Well, she does it twice because it is such – it's emblematic of the series.
Yeah.
But, of course, like in the movie, she goes into the room and like blows away the robot and stuff. In the source material, she like hacks into their comms and says something over their comms and then just blows away everyone in the room and never comes in. She just kills all the fucking bad guys and then just keeps falling. And then one of the guys that lives, like one of the guys from Section 6 who's in the room at the time, just kind of walks to the edge and he's like, whatever kind of, I can't think of the type, what they call the camouflage, but he's just like, something optic, thermo-optic camouflage. He's like, thermo-optic camouflage. And then that's it. They never mention it again. Like, well, I guess all these guys are dead, so, you know. It's pretty fucking awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, that is so cool because it's just, like, just destroys these fucking people. Like, they are putting...
The geisha bot.
Well, like, in the movie, it's a geisha bot, but in that, it's just a room full of businessmen.
Okay.
They're trying to broker a deal with a diplomat of some sort. And, yeah, it's just... It's fantastic. It's really cool. Although the 2.0 version, I've always felt like the only thing that was achieved by redoing that movie with some of the scenes is like more CG animation style. Because it's the same fucking movie, but it's just making the majors like diving off the building naked scenes more sexual.
Okay. Because
it felt like the only thing that they did to me, but maybe I'm wrong. So just watch the original anime, all anime version in my mind, like none of this fancy bullshit. Yeah. Although I do like the opening sequence with the in the 2.0. But yeah.
I'll check it out.
Let's take a quick break, come back. I want to do a little experiment of one, if you guys want to see a sequel in this, and then give me your ideas on where you think this franchise could go. Because obviously it's a very broad-reaching world that has already been built, which you sourced material from other stuff in the Ghost in the Shell family of films and manga, etc. Or do you go with original plot? Do you keep Scarlett Johansson? Do you put her in another body? What do you do? So let's come back, talk about that a little bit. Cool. And then wrap it up.
Okay.
Some duels gotta get going.
Soon.
Yep.
Yes.
All right. So next week on the show, we're talking about the Power Rangers. We hope you'll join us then.
The subject matter was very topical with a lot of what's going on today. I mentioned during one of the previous breaks, Pistorius.
Mm-hmm.
I find that a really interesting one where, he's competing alongside people who have their birth legs. And, his prosthetics actually allow him to perform better than just a normal person, or whether it's the prosthetics or whether it's a combination of, the prosthetics and the training, or whether it's all him and the prosthetics,
did nothing.
Debatable.
Yeah.
But realistically, those legs are built for running. Human legs are not. And that's really just the start. You've got a lot of people like Kurzweil and, Elon Musk, others really talking about the dangers and the good that's going to come along with that, and really how we're not as far off as we think we are. And I don't know, I almost would have liked to see more of that. Like the movie almost starts like 20 years after any of that is really
achieved.
Is really starting. There's a great game series that covers it, Deus Ex, as well. Mm-hmm. If people are familiar. I don't know. I kind of wish they wouldn't make Assassin's Creed movies and
make Deus Ex movies.
Very, very cool plot. But it's you know, it's something that is getting very, very popular today.
There's Ex Machina, which was something along the same lines, right?
Right.
That was an excellent movie.
Well, it's just artificial intelligence. I'd like to see more of humans integrating, like you're saying, Devin. And that would be interesting, too, to source a film that's absolutely nothing like these films. Something like, you know, how The Godfather Part 2 has the kind of simultaneous running young Vito Corleone and then Michael in two different timelines, and how their kind of stories play out with De Niro and Pacino. It would be so very interesting to have, you know, a case for Section 9 going on in a future film. Where they're solving this case or what have you, because there are a lot of things they've already brought to the table. Say, for example, the idea that your memories can be tampered with, which is in the original property. And they do stuff like that, where there are people who can keep you in memory loops and this sort of thing, where you're just doing the same situation over and over and over again. And you don't even realize it. And really, you're just laying on the ground or you're sitting in a chair or something, and you think that all this stuff is happening. Or you don't see the world as it actually is, et cetera. Or you remember the wrong Matrix. Things, whatever. Yeah. Well, it's the Matrix is this.
Yeah.
Like this.
Yeah.
Like the Matrix, if Ghost in the Shell wasn't as popular of a manga as it was, the Matrix would not exist. So
yeah,
whatever. And I think, honestly, them thinking about rebooting the Matrix is on the fucking back of this film coming out. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that's neither here nor there. But I just love that idea. And then like a second story happening. And you'd have to do a lot of quick cuts because even like Francis Ford Coppola talked about how, you know, they've screened various versions of Godfather and they had more of the story of Godfather Part 2 and they had more of the story playing out before the change. And they had to like add a lot more cuts in to make it make the pacing seem a lot more in line with, you know, a general movie going experience kind of thing. But it would be cool to see the answer to the question kind of culminating for you seeing both these timelines and then culminating in Section 9's timeline at the same time or something like that. Very interesting.
Really cool.
I'm just jumping on what you said, so I apologize.
I also thought Bateau's getting the eyes. I just wanted to say that before we kind of moved on. Like I was just worried. But when Bateau gets his eyes, it's not because he chose to get the eyes, you know, and I kind of like that it's like everybody there, nobody has these robot eyes because it's like, I don't want the fucked up eyes. Like, I'll take everything you got, except don't give me the fucked up eyes. Yeah. And, you know, he has to. And, but it's obviously better to have the fucked up looking eyes.
Yeah.
Because they see better, they've got all, you know, they're tactical, they've got the night vision,
vision, x-ray vision. Ones. Yeah, they say that.
But nobody, you don't see anybody else in that world making that same choice. So it's like, even though this is better,
right,
in every possible way,
yeah,
people are still, you know, still shying away from that.
It's a bit of a, if you contrast with what's happening with, you know, surgery, where people want bigger this, bigger that, smaller this, you know, and those aren't necessities, but they have it done. They have everything enhanced, but Bateau only has it done because he has to now.
Mm-hmm. For the record, he does it of his own
volition
in the cartoons.
Oh, really?
Just so that.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. That is a difference here.
But yeah, it's like
the major isn't to blame for him losing.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
It's just the lead up to the crossover, you know,
really
the point at which the prosthetic becomes better, becomes what you want rather than what you have to get.
Yeah.
Like
Pistorius.
Yeah, and you see a lot of work on artificial limbs and stuff like that, getting to a point where we really are, you know, we're close to where it's going to be. It's going to start with the people who have lost those limbs, you know, outperforming the normal person, and then it's quite quickly going to shift to people choosing to
Change out their arms.
Yeah.
Like and, Jax in Mortal Kombat 2.
Like, oh, well, now I'm or a three or I'm whatever. A MMA warrior, like, built for combat. Literally built for combat.
Yeah, it'll be Rock'em Sock'em Robots.
Rock'em Sock'em Robots with, yeah.
Human heads.
Human heads, yeah.
Punching
human heads off. Jesus.
I'd watch the shit out of that. Sounds awesome.
Oh, my God. What world are we moving towards, gentlemen? So I take it, then, that you would be interested in seeing a sequel.
Yeah, something more playing on the technologies.
Yeah,
you know,
I think that'd prequel be cool. could be interesting. Just because I don't know how much more character development there can be for Major, for example.
I just think
I don't know where she can go.
Well, she can transcend everything if she wants to. I mean, you know what I mean?
That would be cool. I would like to see that.
And well, you can go tonight and watch the Ghost in the Shell anime. But yeah, and also, would you keep, my other question before the break was, would you keep the Major in? Would you keep the character of the Major in? Because, for example, like, you know, we've seen, or I guess you guys, or, well, at least Devin hasn't seen properties that, say, for example, have predominantly Bateau run the show kind of thing in terms of leading the team, besides Aramaki. But would you keep the Major in? Would you put her in a different form? Would you put her into the network, like, you know, so she could take over multiple forms? What would you, where do you think you'd want to be?
Really,
would you
like,
spend more time with her pre-death, let's say?
It could be interesting, yeah. Although I don't know how much
she
there
was rebelling.
Is really. Yeah.
She was, you know, she's part of now, like, the whatever 11 they've amalgamated her story into Kuze's. I can't think what the hell it's called, but
the terrorist group.
Yeah, so they, you know, she could be, they could very much do a story with her pre that the surgery that made her the Major.
So she'd just be the kid who ran away.
Yeah,
yeah.
Motoko Kusanagi.
Motoko, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what I'd prefer to see, to be honest. I mean,
I'd like to see Scarlett Johansson in another one of these films.
Everything.
Like, well, I like her a lot.
Yeah.
And in nothing.
Ooh.
In everything and in nothing. I think she did a great job. I mean, if you're going to do another one with the Major, definitely cast her. I'd like that a lot. But, I mean, I'd watch one where it was the pre-operation, too. That'd be fun.
I mean, even though it's unrealistic to ask for, I mean, I'd almost like to see a prequel as just like a world building thing.
Yeah.
You know, like forget about the characters of the current, you know, or have them just be very, very background.
Pop in, yeah.
Peripheral.
Yeah, yeah.
For me, I'd like to see something. I'd like to see a little more bureaucracy, as silly as that sounds. And I'd like to see a little bit more of a police procedural if I was to see another one. I would like to see the Major. I would like to see the team. You know, we see the one thing that we can draw a comparison to that you've referenced on the show, Devin, is that this team is very much like G.I. Joe. Mm-hmm. Like, they all have their unique set of skills that makes them good at X, right? I would very much like to see a story where Section 9, say, for example, has to deal with the bureaucracy of another section's leader trying to kind of put impasses along the way, because yes, they are Section 9, they're like the fucking CIA or like the FBI.
Yeah.
You know, you pretty much just come in and say, like, this is ours now, but there's still kind of there's you know, a political tug of war. And the reason that I want that is because I want to see more Beat Takashi being a motherfucking badass. I want to spend as much time with him in this character as possible. I want to see more Bateau, so you know, I'd like to delve into that a little bit. I think that the scene I was alluding to before, where he's stuck in or someone is tailing him as he goes to get the dog food and so forth, and like a big fucking shootout sequence at a little grocery store, could be where there's all kinds of casualties and shit, or you think until, you know, blah, blah, blah. Like, that could, a lot of this stuff, like, they could source material but build this brilliant kind of procedural where it's got a little bit of a Mission Impossible feel to it, where people are coming after Section 9 kind of thing, you know, and then even add what, you know, that they've if you wanted to go back and say, for example, source the idea of a character like the Puppet Master, then you could go back and use him for his original purpose as Section 6 wanted it, which was to, you know, kind of fuck with specific people.
Right.
And in this case, go in and fucking destroy Section 9 so that, like, Section 6 can rise up kind of
thing. I'm
going
to have to watch
like
the original movies. It sounds fascinating.
Yeah, like, it's something like this. Because that's the thing. Now that you've familiarized yourself with a great group of characters, you can get into a little bit of a G.I. Joe vibe. You can get into a little bit of a espionage vibe. You can do all this stuff. And then you could also layer in those philosophical questions that they did struggle a little bit in this film to kind of translate from the Japanese original content to here. Also, we really have to up the fucking ante on the score. It was beautiful and it was understated and it was elegant, but I don't know why, but I just really like the idea of something being very overt with this. Like, I want to be driven with a piece like this. Yeah. I would like to see some more boomy orchestral fucking choirs, you know, bring out, you know, I want everything. Get me everyone into, like, put everyone that plays an instrument in a room and make something. Like, you know, the entire earth of musicians in a room together.
Okay.
Like, that's the kind of thing. So that's what I would ask for in a sequel, and I very much want to see it. Yeah. I think that anyone that is complaining about this flick on, you know, for any of the reasons that we stated, it's bullshit. Mm-hmm. Anyone that likes it or doesn't like it for valid reasons is probably in the anomaly, in all seriousness. I think sequel has way more earning potential than this one.
I've spoken to maybe three people who watched this and they all liked it. Yeah. I don't know. I don't know what the issue is.
Yeah, so there's at least six people that want to watch this film. The three of us and those three people you talked to. Perfect.
Cool.
$1 million film right there. All right. Any final thoughts on Ghost in the Shell, gentlemen?
Loved it. It's great.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was a good movie. It's a real, so I'll say it's say what you will. It's a it's just kind of a obviously in a shit situation in terms of the backlash, the kind of cultural climate we're in right now. Mm-hmm. It was kind of a poorly timed decision that the studio made that has really pit people against this movie.
How do you mean? Climate.
Exactly. It's the right time for there to be backlash.
The outrage machine is hard at work.
Not full force.
Exactly. Yeah. And so, I understand why it happened. It's shit that it happened, and really, I think if people gave the movie a chance, just went and saw it, they probably would enjoy it.
Oh, absolutely.
So it's, I don't know.
I think this movie is going to do incredible numbers on demand and Amazon rentals and this sort of thing.
That's kind of a shame, just because it was excellent in 3D.
Oh, you got
so
like,
good.
And that's the thing. It's like this film is going to find its audience in home release. I'm almost certain of it, and it breaks my fucking heart, because you should be going out and seeing this in 3D, because it's one of the best 3D experiences I've ever had.
That's
because
wonderful.
It felt like fucking art.
Yeah.
It didn't feel like, hey, this is a scam to get people into the theater.
Right.
It felt like we're doing this as art, which I'm pretty sure I have to look up the definition in the dictionary again of film, but I believe it is the art of the moving picture,
yes,
if I'm not mistaken. So any other things we want to add, gentlemen?
Hey, ignore the scores. Go see it.
Yep.
Good movie.
Yeah, definitely go watch it. Watch it in theaters. Don't wait until it comes out on DVD.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Totes awesome. Theaters.
Yeah.
All right.
Totes my goats.
Remember, this is just the beginning of the conversation. We want to continue it on with you. So tell us this week what you guys thought of Ghost in the Shell. If you haven't seen it, go and fucking see it, and then tell us what you thought about it, because you should.
Also, if you haven't seen it, why have you listened to this podcast?
Ruined
the movie for yourself. You've done it again. All right? God damn it. I tell you this every time. Go watch it.
You can reach out to us at Mermel Podcast on Twitter, at MRML Podcast. You can email the show at show@moviesaremylife.com. Do you guys want to offer up your Twitters?
Sure. It's at Abdullah Nakvi. It'll be in the show notes, I guess.
Yep.
Sweet.
Devin?
@wire_homeboy. Your homeboy.
Cool. What up?
I'm @notbrandonfleet. Remember to subscribe to the show on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, wherever podcasts are heard, Google Play Music, et cetera, et cetera. While you're there, we'd love it if you could give us a rating and a review because it helps other people find us. And additionally, we love reading that kind of stuff because it feeds our egos and, you know, that's what we're into. Yeah, visit us at moviesfrommylife.com this week. Blah, 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 blah. Thanks for hanging out with us.
You guys. Bye.
We love all our listeners.
Except for you, Jim.
Yeah, fuck off. Fuck you, Carl.
You know, much like our Power Rangers panel, which is actually coming out next week, obviously we're recording it on the same day, and, or no, much like, fuck it, who cares? Let's just move on with the show because I'm not doing this fucking shout out to people who can't make it anymore. Fuck them. They didn't make it here. Try harder.
You should leave this in.
I'm going to.